Welcome to The Property Wizard. If you are brand new to the real estate investment world or have limited experience, you've come to the right place. Freddie Crouch has over 35 years of real estate investing experience. He's seen it all, and he's ready to share it with you. This podcast takes an inside look at investing in real estate, what to look for, and most of all, how to move forward. Please welcome the property wizard, Freddie.
Welcome back, everybody. Today's topic is raising investment dollars. It's a question I'm asked a great deal. Where can I find the money? How can I get started? Well, what we're going to discuss today are some, what I think are some pretty obvious ways to turn around and raise money, and maybe a few not so obvious ways. Bernie, do you have any idea where you may go if you were looking for money to invest in real estate?
A couple of obvious ones are what money I have on hand, cash in the bank, what assets I own that have a value that the bank might consider, family and friends. I'm kind of limited at that point in time. What other options are there?
Well, probably your first choice is use what cash you have on hand. Maybe withdraw money. Now, be careful when I say withdraw, because of course there's withholding taxes that are going to be payable if you start withdrawing money from any type of registered plan. But if you have ready access to cash in your savings, that's a wonderful first place to start. Or, like I said, you can access other investments. But before you go cashing in any investments that may be either in the form of term deposits, GICs or otherwise, or registered plans, please seek the advice of your accountant. Because, of course, you are going to have to pay the government their fair share of taxes if you withdraw from a registered plan. You can utilize lines of credit. And many of us have lines of credit that are attached either to your principal residence or are just personally secured. They're an excellent way to turn around and raise investment dollars. You can also consider asking family and friends to invest with you. And we're going to spend a little bit of time discussing that in later podcasts, because that, and I am a strong advocate of this, I believe one of the best and safest ways to first getting started investing in real estate is by participating in a co-tenancy or a syndication group, where the risk is spread out evenly amongst all the partners and where you can take a small amount of money and buy or invest in a relatively large asset. Now, to that end, one of the ways to get involved with a group like that would be to join an investment club. Many neighborhoods have investment clubs, have groups of people, whether informally or formally, that get together and invest or speak about investing in various forms of brick and mortar real estate. It's a great way to meet some like-minded individuals. And quite frankly, if an investment club is not something that you're part of or that you know of, start one. Invite some of your family and friends. Invite people to talk about what I still maintain is a topic everyone wants to participate, investing in real estate. Does that help you at all, Bernie?
It does. So in an investment club, what would I look for to find, like, not knowing anything about them?
Yeah. So now you're talking about maybe two distinct things. First of all, you need to kind of put together or gather together a group of like-minded individuals. And in this case, you're looking for individuals that have expressed an interest or you've spoken to about investing in real estate. That's the first thing you want to do. Get to know each other. Talk about what lessons they may have learned, what lessons maybe you can share with them about your maybe limited investment experience. Now, it wouldn't be uncommon, for instance, to have a member of an investment club who kind of fills the role of more of a mentor than actually a member, someone who maybe has a little more experience than the others, someone who can kind of explain how things are done and how to go about finding the right properties, because these are all topics that you're going to want to explore. Because what's going to happen is this: you're going to be sitting around and someone's going to say, hey, I just spoke to John the other day, and John was telling me there's a hell of a deal on condominiums at the new development at ABC Street. And of course, people are going to want to know more. They're going to want to get a little more excited about it. And what you want to really try to avoid in that situation is undue excitement or enthusiasm about an unproven either development or investment opportunity. A good friend of mine did say this: real estate investments are like streetcars. A new one is coming around the corner every 15 minutes. The key is knowing the correct one to get on. And that's true because almost each and every day, a real estate deal or a supposed deal will come across my desk. The idea is to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff. The idea is to analyze it for what it is without undue emotion. It's exciting to find the right project, but you need to look each and every investment opportunity critically. You need to be, so remember, streetcar, new one coming around the corner every 15 minutes. If you don't get on this one, there's always another one coming. The key is knowing which streetcar to get on. Now, that's one way. And although we talked about utilizing cash savings and maybe cashing in other investments or utilizing lines of credit, you know, there's another way, another more probably obvious way of raising investment dollars. If you're a homeowner, you may be able to access ready cash by arranging for a home equity line of credit. You can maybe renegotiate your first mortgage when the mortgage comes up for renewal, increase that amount and use the difference to invest in real estate. Or you may be able to go to a private source and secure a second mortgage and use those funds for investing in real estate. But that's kind of the next stage, because the first stage, as I said in one of my earlier podcasts, home ownership isn't for everybody. I am a strong advocate for it, and I believe it should be your first real estate investment because there's lots of way to make that equity work for you. However, not everybody is geared towards home ownership. Many people have no interest in owning or operating a home, but they're very content renting. And many of those people have access. They're the ones that very often, particularly early on in their working lives, have more bankable savings. So at the end of the day, you know, the option of either securing secondary financing or renewing your first mortgage or applying for a home equity line of credit may not apply to you, but that still leaves lots of avenues for you to access and raise investment dollars. One of the questions that I received during, I think it was podcast number 3, or shortly thereafter, had to do with assessing opportunities. And, you know, everyone's kind of, well, I heard there's a great deal here, or there's a, you know, this person bought this property for that, and that was a fantastic deal, and that'll never happen again. Well, like I said earlier, you know, real estate deals come by my desk all the time. And when you actually start looking for them, you'll see all sorts of opportunity. So where do you find them? Do you have any ideas, Bernie? Where do you find a great real estate deal?
If you're not looking for some things, then you don't spot them. And I guess if I was becoming a little more attuned to it, I'd be paying attention to any newspaper articles or anything online. If I'm connected with somebody that is in business and is talking about it, but what's happening in their space and near their locations, kind of the few ways I would naturally gravitate towards it. Are there other ones, Freddie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, as you build and develop your group and your investment philosophy, whether it's you operating as a lone wolf or lone investor or a group of you, there's all sorts of different venues or ways that you can find those worthwhile investment opportunities. Probably the number one way is to find yourself a really good real estate agent, one who's kind of geared and really is attuned with what's happening in the investment world. Not all real estate agents do investment real estate, and that's okay, but you need to find somebody you feel comfortable with, you feel you have a little bit of a rapport with, and someone, again, who is experienced in investment and commercial realty. Another way or another great source are just family and friends. Not only can they be part of your own little group, investment group, but it's more ears to the ground. I mean, through their own individual networks, they may hear of a potential property that's coming on the market for sale. They may hear of a distressed or an opportunity, a value-added opportunity that is really crying out for some form of real estate investment. Word of mouth, obviously, is a standard for sharing knowledge. And again, that's what's going to happen when your family and friends go out and hit the road and keep in mind or try to keep in the forefront of their mind of what opportunities there may be. It's very much like, you know, you may consider buying a specific model of car and, you know, you do a little bit of research and the next thing you know, it seems like everybody's driving that model of car. So you need to kind of be tuned up and make your mind open to what possibilities there may be by just listening. Very often a conversation may slide by where you wouldn't even consider it under normal circumstances. But if you're looking for the opportunity, keep your ear to the ground. Very often those opportunities will present themselves, whether it could be most anywhere in the grocery line, you know, and again, any type of gathering, work or otherwise. So keep your ears open, you know, ask family and friends to kind of scour the landscape for you. Very often you'll see advertisements, both in the paper and online, people saying must sell or expounding the virtues of their own specific real estate investment. Those are worthwhile to explore. Just see what the situation is. You never know. Business publications. There's another one. You know, maybe a local firm is expanding. Maybe they need new space. Maybe a built-to-suit opportunity may arise where you can actually supply that space to the business. Or maybe a business, unfortunately, is going out of business. In a particular case like that, there may be a great opportunity to buy the property. Maybe you can kind of come in and say, look, I understand you own this piece of real estate and the debt load's a little high. How about if we buy it and lease it back? We'll buy your property and we'll lease it back to you. Very often, and I've done that in the past, that's a win-win situation. You have a built-in tenant and you've bought a property at or below current market rate. And it's all because you were listening. You read the business publication. You read the article. You realize that maybe someone's having a little bit of difficulty and you come in and you say, look, if this is the situation and if this is going to help, and this is an ideal situation that you can address and deal with. So keep your ear to the ground, be open to all sorts of possibilities. So I just want to finish up on one point that I just touched on briefly before, and that's your investment group. Very often, it's beneficial to have a mentor amongst the group. And I know I touched on that briefly, but I just really want to reemphasize. Sometimes it's good to have someone with far more experience involved in your group, someone who's used to jumping through the hoops and understands maybe the process a little easier or a little better than some of the neophyte members. So don't be shy about asking someone that you know who is investing in real estate currently for some help. Most of us will jump at the opportunity, you know, to meet some like-minded individuals. And you never know, that individual may be one of your most enthusiastic new members or be involved in your first real estate transaction. So don't be shy about approaching people with real estate related experience. They are, by the very reason and fact that they have had the experience, an invaluable source. So the other thing that I wanted to touch on, and I just touched on briefly before, was I talked about value-added opportunities. Do you have an idea what that is, Bernie?
I'm thinking that it's more than just the face value of what you're looking at. So the property's there, but there's something more that's buried inside it.
That's absolutely true. One of the factors that I always look for when investing in real estate is whether or not there's a value added opportunity here. And by that, I mean, is the property in a form of some, I'm going to use the term distress, but I don't want that immediately to raise alarm bells with everybody. But is the property in such a situation that it might be in poor physical condition? Maybe it's not being managed properly. Maybe it's vacant. Maybe there's really poor or inadequate financing on the property. Or maybe there's more that can be done with the property. Now, Well, you could look at the property and immediately dismiss it because of those issues. I prefer to look at the property and say, well, if there are no problems, there are no opportunities. So what I prefer to do is seek out and search those properties so that we can introduce a plan as new owners, as investors, to turn around and rectify the situation. So, for example, if you have a property that's been on the market for quite some time or is a little bit derelict or suffers from any one of these conditions, chances are it's not going to command the highest price. And therein lies an opportunity for buying a property at slightly below or greatly below what its potential value is. So in a situation like that, when you're putting together a group, you put together the group with the idea that you're going to buy the property, but what you need to do is make sure that when you're arranging your financing or contributing your funds, you also have enough money to remedy the situation too. In some cases, it may not need a great deal of money to remedy the situation. In others, it could be considerable, particularly if the building is functionally obsolete. It all depends what the new purpose will be for the property. In some cases, it could be strictly a matter of the financing is terrible on it, and the maybe current owner doesn't qualify for new financing at a better or attractive rate. It's an ideal situation to come in and buy or pay for a property in cash if you're able and you can. Or it's a perfect opportunity for you to take advantage of current rates. So what I'm always looking for is I'm looking for those value-added opportunities, because then what you've done is you've bought a property. Even if you buy that property at market rate, you go in, you enhance the value by rectifying any one of these obvious situations. You're the one, it's going to be your group that's going to be most advantaged by the increase of value. So at the end of the day, don't shy away from the problem properties. Go out and seek them out. If you don't have the ability as group members to rectify the situation, whether, again, it's management or the physical condition of the property, or maybe changing the use altogether, if you do not have that ability, then what you do is you go out and you seek the expertise you need to rectify the situation. So again, you may, depending on the situation and what the upside or potential value of that property could be, you may pay market value for the property. More than likely, if it suffers again from any one of these situations, you're going to pay less than market value. By doing that, you're going to increase the margin that you have for improvement. For instance, there may be a property on the market not be utilized to highest and best use. What you do is you buy it, and you may even pay market value for it. But what you do is you have it rezoned. You have it rezoned, and all of a sudden, the value of that property, it could possibly skyrocket. So you have to look at all the different options. I had a piece of property that I bought outside a major city center not all that long ago. It was a nice piece of prime property, but no one was building on it. No one was looking at what the end run or what could happen to that property was. And it was zoned for a low-rise residential. But it was right next door to a business park. So what I did is I bought the property at a pretty reduced price because no one could or wanted to build this low-rise residential structure on the site. But what I immediately did is I applied for rezoning. And I applied for rezoning that would allow for an extension of a business park to that particular parcel of land. Now, you'd kind of think the opposite, that in this particular case, you know, why would you want to change something from residential to business park? But there was a huge demand for space in any one of the business parks around the center. So by doing that, I was able to realize a four-fold increase in the value of that property within a matter of, I don't think it took me much longer than 5 months to arrange for the rezoning. So I bought it for so much and I sold it for almost five times what it was I paid for it after 5 months. And that was just a simple matter. I bought it at market rate, but I bought a property no one wanted or no one could do anything with. Because the very reason why no one wanted to build a low rise was because of the business park. So that's why I was able to pick up the property for the price I did. I had it rezoned for the business park because there was a demand. And again, I sold that property for almost five times what it was paid for in a very short period of time.
So I guess rezoning is going to be another podcast downstream.
Rezoning. Now, when we talk about major municipalities, it's a little more difficult to do, even though, you know, everyone is looking for intensification and an increase in density levels. That's primarily because the amount of serviced property, the amount of property outside or on the outskirts of the city limits, any major city limits, is really in limited supply. And it is very, very expensive to turn around and put sewers and water into new subdivisions. But the big push seems to be today in increasing density levels. And I think that's brilliant. And it opens up all sorts of opportunities for people like you and I, Bernie, to buy a piece of property and add either an in-law suite or maybe convert a single family into multiple units. There's all sorts of exciting possibilities out there. Again, remember that real estate opportunities are plentiful.
Okay.
It's time for the Property Wizard's Word of the Day.
Word of the Day. What word have you chosen for us today, Bernie?
Irrevocable.
Well, in its simplest term, irrevocable means that, and it's usually in reference to an agreement, is that the terms of the agreement are incapable of being revoked or recalled by the offeree. Now, you're going to see this in real estate terms. What we're referencing is we're referencing an agreement of purchase and sale. So it's not uncommon if you're buying a property, you present the proposed terms to the seller, either directly or through an agent. It's irrelevant. But rather than leave the agreement open-ended, which obviously you don't want to do, you don't want to be stuck or bound by the terms of the agreement should it be accepted by the seller 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the road. What you do is you attach an irrevocable period to it, meaning this is what I'm prepared to offer under these terms, under these conditions, and this offer is open for you to accept until insert irrevocable period. If you're buying a piece of commercial or investment property, it wouldn't be unusual for that period to extend usually a minimum of 3-4 days. And I've seen it extended for up to a couple of weeks. So what happens is that the seller has that period of time that you've stipulated on the agreement of purchase and sale to accept your agreement. And if he accepts it in whole without making any changes or amendments within that period of time, you have a binding agreement, period. Now, subject, of course, to what conditions may be included in the agreement, but it is a binding agreement. So subsequently, what ends up happening is that if changes are made, which often are, for instance, you know, the seller may not be very happy with your price, so he increases the price by X number of dollars. He is going to now change the irrevocable date to give you a specified period of time to accept the amended terms and conditions that he's now offering you. And should you accept the amended terms within that irrevocable period, then the agreement becomes firm and binding on both parties. Does that help?
Yep, perfect.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us on our podcast. Bernie, this has just been a wonderful experience. I really think this Freddie and Bernie show has really got some legs to it. I thank you so much for participating. Join us next week when we talk about property management and setting priorities and who the members of your property management team can and should be. With that, I sign off. Take care, Bernie.
Thanks for joining Freddie on another edition of The Property Wizard. Got a question? Ready to invest? Email info@gentryres.com. And if you'd like to find out more about the courses offered through Gentry Learning, visit gentryres.com. Until next time, remember, If there are no problems, there are no opportunities.